Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
Herbs have been used by people since the dawn of time. When Rockefeller introduced allopathic medicine, many herbal remedies fell by the wayside as people put their faith in prescription pills and the world just gets sicker. Here at Heathen Herbs, we look to the past and to nature for answers. We offer tinctures, magnesium skin cream, lip balm, tooth powder, colloidal silver throat spray, and more. Check us out at heathenherbs.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You've made a serious investment in protecting yourself and your family. You've purchased the gun, the ammunition, the training, and even secured a license to carry in your state. You know the Constitution and don't believe you should have to pay for a right that you already have, as written in the Second Amendment, but you are law-abiding. Now you are considering the legal defense options you should have if you ever have to use a firearm. Self-Defense Fund is a comprehensive litigation membership backing you on appeals, legal expenses, court costs, and more. Up to $1 million per incident and unlimited attorney costs per member. Discover selfdefensefund.com for yourself. Any weapon, any state, any time.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. At the end of last week's program, I brought up the state of Virginia's Racial Integrity Act of 1924, which forbade interracial marriage. And that is only one law of many which were instituted between the founding of the American Republic and 1963, designed to protect our precious blood, protect our national character, protect our unique combination of beauty, intelligence, and creativity, and protect our children's future. In 1963, virtually all of these laws were standing, still on the books. The white character of America then stands in testimony to that. But now, things are very different. What happened? I could cite the political betrayal step by step. I could tell you about the packing of the Supreme Court with aliens and subversives and how they struck down our racial laws. I could trace the payoffs and the pressures and the corruption of our political process, which led to the enactment of new laws, which opened our borders and took away our freedom of association. And those were important factors, to be sure. But the most important reason white America stands on the brink of extinction is the change in attitude of white Americans themselves. Many whites have come to accept a self-hating, anti-white morality, a morality that defines as good whatever tends to the disappearance of our race, and defines as evil, in fact, the epitome of evil, whatever tends to support or protect the continued existence of our race. What caused that attitude shift? There are many reasons, but one stands above all others in importance. In 1963, we stood at the very beginning of a new age. The first generation, which had grown up with television, was just then coming to adulthood. The impact of television can hardly be exaggerated. It quickly replaced newspapers as the primary source of news and information for the public. It rapidly became the main source of entertainment, both dramas and comedies. It was the first all-encompassing virtual reality for its victims, filling their eyes and ears with an imaginary world that, to a large extent, replaced the real world for most Americans for at least several hours every day. It defined reality for most of us, outside of the small part of the world personally known to us. It became the national arbiter of taste, fashion, and mores. It showed us what was good and what was bad. It showed us how the beautiful people acted, and what pleased them, and what horrified and shocked them. And most of us were very sensitive to those portrayals, unreal as they were, and acted accordingly. We wanted to be like the beautiful people, too. And in 1963, just as today, the television networks were firmly in the control of one particular ethnic group, the Jews. Sarnoff, a Jew, ran NBC. Goldenson ran ABC. And Paley ran CBS. All were Jews. Their Jewish successors dominate television to this day. And heavy Jewish ownership and control of newspapers, publishing, and film studios effectively prevented anyone with a mass audience from pointing out the Jewish TV monopoly. With this media power, Jews were able to dictate to politicians, and most importantly, they had a main line into the optic and oral nerves of the American public, and they proceeded to change those healthy racial attitudes held by Americans back when America was still America. Jews are, in general, an intelligent people. They are very aware of the fact that racial integrity is necessary for a people's survival. They know that racial integrity is needed to preserve each people's unique character. And they apply those rules to their own people, though not exactly as we applied them to ourselves in healthier times. Many of their publications decry intermarriage with non-Jews as a threat to Jewish survival. Israel is pointedly and repeatedly defined by them in ethnic and racial terms. Unlike white Europeans, The Jews are a most peculiar, parasitic race, which apparently wants and needs a degree of intermarriage with their host populations in order to pass more unnoticed among them. Such a parasite is able to preserve its Jewish essence nonetheless. Exactly how they do this is not yet known, but I have presented my own theory in my broadcast, How Shall I Kill Thee? Let Me Count the Ways. Yet, they do want a reservoir of indisputably Jewish genes, and in that reservoir, mixture with non-Jews is prevented as much as possible. There, the Jews want racial integrity and racial survival in a racial state for themselves. Israel. And even in white nations where mixture is tolerated, there are also reservoirs of indisputably Jewish genes. The many rabbis and other Jews who rail against intermarriage, yet never seem to be called out as racists by the Jewish-controlled media, see to that. But for white Americans who watch the Jewish-controlled networks and read the Jewish-controlled press, it's multiculturalism, pluralism, unlimited immigration, and race does not exist. Imagine if the president, the head of the State Department, and our top military leaders all stood up in front of the cameras and microphones and declared in their official capacities that they were firmly committed to the survival of America as a white nation. Unlikely. Unthinkable, actually, considering the nature of our current leaders. But those men, and many other U.S. officials, have made such a statement. They just changed the words around a little. They substituted Israel for America, and Jewish for white. But the statement was made by them, again and again, in fact. And if you do an internet search on the phrase, you'll find an amazing number of white American and other non-Jewish politicians who are very concerned over the, quote, survival of Israel as a Jewish state, close quote. And they didn't just pull that phrase out of a hat. It's not just the survival of Israel. The as a Jewish state part is repeatedly tagged on at the end. Again and again. It's something they've been told to say, almost word for word. It seems that the land by itself means nothing if the race is destroyed. And so, it is Israel as a Jewish state that is consistently emphasized. Way back in June 2003, this issue came to a head. It was reported then that Israeli Foreign Minister Sylvan Shalom was extremely concerned that the language used by Arab and U.S. diplomats meet with Jewish approval, and he particularly wanted, quote, a clear statement by Bush of the need to preserve Israel as a Jewish state. We expect Abu Mazen to say so as well. We expect the Sharm el-Sheikh summit to express an Arab undertaking to recognize Israel as a Jewish state. Close quote. The very next day, June 3rd, the Israeli newspaper Mariv discussed how seriously Jewish leaders take the inclusion of the words Jewish state in statements on Israel by American politicians. Leave the phrase as a Jewish state out, and they become very concerned. When it was merely rumored that George Bush was not planning to refer to Israel in precisely that fashion in a summit in Aqaba, the Jews made it clear what a mistake that was. The article about it was even titled, "Bush Refuses to Declare That Israel is a Jewish State." On the same day the Mariv article appeared, June 3rd, Colin Powell told a press conference that the administration believes that, quote, "Israel must be always seen as a Jewish state," close quote. And the day after that, at the summit, President Bush, quote, "pledged to protect Israel as a vibrant Jewish state," close quote. Gee, I wonder, why did he decide to phrase it that way? And then on July 29th and on several other occasions, Bush used almost precisely the same language. Quote, "America is firmly committed to the security of Israel as a Jewish state," close quote. Correspondent John Donnelly of the Boston Globe admitted that, quote, "Bush always uses similar language when addressing any political issue involving Israel," close quote. Then Dick Cheney got into the act. He spoke at a campaign reception at New York's Waldorf Astoria Hotel. What did he say? Quote, "In the Holy Land, America is committed to the security of Israel as a Jewish state," close quote. Haven't we heard that somewhere before? In the weeks and months that followed, media figures and politicians started to repeat the special phrase, a message of subservience, though most white people were clueless about the coded language. Republicans Jack Ryan and Eric Cantor, Fox News commentator Charles Krauthammer, and countless others all repeated the phrase almost word for word. Assistant Secretary of State William Burns publicly decried moves that might, quote, "imperil the future of Israel as a Jewish state. Within the next decade or so, Jews will be a minority in the area encompassing Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza," close quote. I wonder what Mr. Burns thought about the changing demographics of Texas, California, and North Carolina. Do demographic trends there imperil the white majority? Do they threaten the existence of Texas as a white state? Do they threaten the existence of America as a white nation? Fast forward to the Biden administration. On March 8 of last year, U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price uttered almost the same exact phrase imposed on our so-called leaders almost 20 years ago, saying how concerned the administration is about, quote, "Israel's continuing identity as a Jewish and democratic state," close quote. A few years earlier, during the final month of the Obama administration, Secretary of State John Kerry said that America's resources were being readied and deployed to, quote, "ensure Israel's future as a Jewish and democratic state," close quote. The same year, Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes told us that, quote, "Recognition of Israel as a Jewish state has been the U.S. position for years," close quote. No kidding, Ben. What about a state for white European people? That is essentially forbidden. And more than that, any discussion of such a state that does not condemn the idea as racist is also essentially forbidden in our great free democracy. Hillary Clinton chimed in, vowing to protect Israel, quote, "as a Jewish democratic state," close quote. Barack Obama gave two speeches 3 days apart in 2011 using the exact same phrase. Quote, Israel as a Jewish state and the homeland for the Jewish people, close quote. This use of the same boilerplate text by all these leaders is a coincidence, like Kamala Harris is beautiful. An editorial in New York's Jewish Post openly called for us to find ways, quote, to protect Israel as a Jewish state with an ever-growing Jewish majority, close quote. Why, then, do the Jewish media and their followers tell us it is wrong to want America to have an ever-growing white majority? In negotiations between Palestinians and Israel's Labor Party, the Jewish side requested that, as part of the price for peace, Palestinian refugees must renounce any claim to return to Israel and must further, quote, recognize Israel as a Jewish state for eternity, close quote. That's an expression of their concern, their imperative requirement for the racial integrity of their population. That's the way the Jews view it. And white politicians are supposed to support Jewish racial integrity and Israel as a racial state, while at the same time they must never express concern for white racial integrity, or concern about the survival of France, Russia, Germany, Britain, or America as white nations. Who is more likely to survive? The race which denies it even exists, which is afraid to speak out for its own interests except with weasel words and dissimulation? Or the race that openly asserts that it is right, moral, and necessary that it continue to exist, and that it have its own exclusive territory to guarantee its future? The Jews have their advocates aplenty, born and bought. They have their racial state. White people need to shed their fear and show their strength. We need to stand up and say that it is right and good and moral for our people to survive, for our people to have our own countries, for white children to continue being born. And the group that is saying that uncompromisingly and continuously and responsibly in every land where white people dwell is the National Alliance. Join us today.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people, 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the Alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey Guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism fundamentally is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine, a place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kind of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with the conservatives, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just at dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics, the TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker. Nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life just like here could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and the verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of it, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into our Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces, they just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal. After we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves. That they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for the for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.